Hey, welcome to the Housecast for Tuesday, October 2nd, 2018. Big Jim, Aaron V here. Ryan's waiting on the phone. Dylan Jones going to be our guest. David Bowie, The Oral History, available now on Amazon and in stores. Big book of Bowie. There's so much in there. We only got him for 8 minutes, so we're going to try to get as much as we can of him. But I would encourage you, if you're a Bowie fan, this is a must-read.
Well, if I had to describe it, I would say it's like a giant book of gossip from close friends and people that worked with Bowie over the years.
Gossip stories, yeah.
I mean, you know, there's antidotes.
The thing about Bowie is everybody has a different period of Bowie that they're interested in. Think about it. I mean, you've got people that the Ziggy Stardust stuff, and then you got the whole thing with Iggy Pop and all that, and then you've got Modern Love. I mean, that whole 80s thing when he changed himself again, it was like the coolest looking guy on the planet for the 85th time. And then he goes out and does this heavy metal album with Tin Machine. And then he's doing, like, you know, movies. And you always wonder, like, I always thought Bowie could have been a bigger movie star. I just didn't want to.
Well, Labyrinth.
Seriously, Labyrinth was a great movie. There was one. He was in Cat People. Do you remember that movie?
I do.
Yeah, with he was a great actor. He just didn't want to do that. If you want to see David Bowie act, it's Episodes. The one with, oh, God, I always forget his name. The little British guy, Ricky Gervais. There's a scene where he runs into Bowie in a bar. And he's telling them about his TV show. And Bowie just spins around to a piano and starts playing a song called Funny Little Fat Man. And just completely destroys Ricky Gervais in front of the entire bar. It's hilarious. And then you find out later on that he made up most of it as they were doing it on the improv. So, yeah, Dylan Jones will join us here. David Bowie, The Oral History.
What I took away from this book is that Bowie was born to be a star. That is what he was born to be. That is what his whole... That's what he wanted.
Everything. Yeah. The thing I'm always interested in Bowie, and I'm sure we'll talk about it too, is the fact that he changed because he was such an artist, so right brain, that there's no way he got bored with these characters. And he felt like that's why the comparison, and I know some people don't like her right now, but if you think about it, Madonna, for how many years, changed who she was from the Material Girl to the whole sex thing to the different sounds to the disco stuff.
But that's how she stayed relevant.
But that, well, think about Bowie. Bowie constantly changed what he was doing. I mean, you know, when Ziggy played out, he did something else. And the glam rock, I mean, my God. Again, like, I remember the Serious Moonlight Tour. That was the name of that one. Saw David Bowie, and it was like the coolest concert ever. And I wondered how many people were there had any idea that David Bowie was Ziggy Stardust or had done these other things, you know, like Gene Genie and Panic in Detroit and even Heroes with Brian Eno and stuff. You can go on and on and on talking about all the different things that Bowie did.
My sister and I, this was one of the coolest trips of my life. We got to see Bowie at the Kit Kat Club in New York, in Manhattan, and it holds maybe 400 people. It's a really intimate kind of theater club venue. We went for the weekend and he was so close you could touch him.
See, that's cool.
And his wife was standing on the side of the stage all night. Aman.
Yeah.
She's so beautiful in person, by the way. She's just, like, stunning. But it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in my life because it wasn't like this giant stadium. It was like I could almost touch him.
Well, and they talk about, like, here in Detroit, I've read stories, you know, so much, like, there was the Michigan Theater. He did 6 nights in a row at one point. I mean, you talk about Bowie playing gigs here in the Motor City. His last tour wrapped up. He was at the Palace. Yeah, it was at the Palace. But, I mean, it's David Bowie, man. I mean, Bowie was just like one of those things that we'd listen to. I actually got into Tin Machine recently. It popped up for some reason. I was going through some old stuff, and I found Tin Machine. If you ever listen to that, my God, they blast the hell out of that. That's heavy metal. That's like just heavy, angry rock. That was him with Niles Rogers, and they got into that whole thing, and then that was like when everybody was doing Power Station and all the other ones like that. Yeah,
there's a section of this book where now Niall talks about when he met Bowie for the first time, and I had to laugh out loud because Niall said he was with Billy Idol of all people. Him and Billy Idol were out partying.
And they ran into Bowie?
And they went to an after-hours club and ran into Bowie. And Niall talked about how all of his friends had been in the Young Americans. Luther Vandross was in the Young Americans.
Yeah, backup singer for that. But there was other stuff, too, that never came out, right?
Yeah, he was talking about how Bowie played Let's Dance for the first time for Niall, and it wasn't at all how the modern version that we hear with Let's Dance, you know, all upbeat.
Right.
It was an acoustic. When he wrote it, it was acoustic.
We kind of figured they play it out like that, right? I mean, like last week when we were talking about the Beatles stuff, we had Jill's Martin on. Same kind of thing where you have to build the song up. Yeah, you wonder. Bowie was so cool, and it's strange when you go look at videos of David Bowie beyond just the music videos and concert stuff. You can find David Bowie on the Dinah Shore show.
What?
Oh yeah, David Bowie and Iggy Pop are on the Dinah Shore show.
How did that happen?
Because she was cool to them, and that's where Iggy talked about how Bowie saved him.
Wow.
In the 70s, and it was kind of this mutual admiration society. So we're waiting on right now. We're checking on Dylan Jones, the oral history of David Bowie.
It's a fun read. They talk about his marriage when he met Iman. There's a little bit of everything in there. There's something interesting, too, is when David met Stevie Ray Vaughan. There's a whole thing about that.
Which is always interesting because we know the tour fell apart because they didn't want Double Trouble to open. We just wanted him.
Right.
And they wanted him to tour. And they had actually, there's rehearsal video or audio of them playing. I think it's Let's Dance or Modern Love or one of those and going through the band rehearsals. But he wasn't going to go if it wasn't Double Trouble. So they were doing that one.
And then Nile Rodgers talked about how Let's Dance was the easiest record that they ever recorded. 17
really?
Days from start to finish. 17 days. Can you imagine recording such a masterpiece? I thought something like that would take 6 months to a year to record, but Niall said they went in the studio and got that whole album done in 17 days.
Oh, the whole album in 17 days?
17 days.
Yeah, you hear the stories about people, man, when the muse hits, man, but that's just crazy. So again, Dylan Jones will join us. Oh, there he is. Dylan Jones, welcome to the Motor City. How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you doing?
We are wonderful. It's Big Jim and Aaron, Big Jim's House, WCSX in Detroit, classic rock station. And obviously, David Bowie is part of the thread of the Motor City Music League. That was more of a comment there. But anyway, so Dylan, the book is fantastic. David Bowie, The Oral History. There's so many things to touch on, but Aaron was just telling the great story about Bowie. There's the Nile Rodgers and Billy Idol.
Yeah, I thought this was cool. And it had to be fun for you to sit down with all these great producers and people who were such an intricate part of his life. But I loved the stories from Nile Rodgers about his time with Bowie.
Yeah, I think that the extraordinary thing is that when you sit down with 180 different people, you really get a sense of what somebody was like. Although I think that the times that he spent with Nile Rodgers was when he was going through one of his more sort of excessive periods, shall we say.
Exactly. But now the period with Iggy Pop, and I know you address this in the book as well. Obviously our connection again to the Motor City, but from Gene Genie and Panic in Detroit and everything else. Iggy always talked about how David saved him at one point. Was it a mutual admiration society between them?
Yeah, I think it was. Although actually interviewing Iggy and a lot of people around that time when they were living in Berlin, you always look upon those times as being quite austere, quite depressing. But actually, it sounds to me like they were kind of living in student accommodation because one would come in and say, you know, who's had my milk? Who's taken my cheese? So it's just like being in a dorm, I think.
And that was like, but that was a time where Bowie just kind of checked out for a little bit, right? I mean, he wanted to live as incognito as David Bowie could be.
Yeah, he disappeared to Berlin for a couple of years, started wearing bizarre clothes and funny flat caps, and was a period where he didn't really want to be seen by anybody in the public eye.
Was what David Bowie, the evolution and the constant change of David Bowie, and again, when we read through the book, too, The Oral History, David Bowie, Dylan Jones with us, was this insecurity or was this just creativity?
I think he got bored, to be honest with you. He was someone who spent 10 years trying to become famous. And then when he eventually became famous with Ziggy Stardust in the early 70s, I think that even though he was always obviously very happy that he'd become successful, I think he soon became bored with the whole idea of it, and so consequently kept creating these characters for himself.
That's just fascinating to me, because Jim and I were talking before we got you on the phone about times that we've seen him perform, and I saw him towards the later stage of his life when he was less of a, you know, into the glam makeup and stuff and more into his musicianship. So it's always baffled me just the change of his persona always, you know, over the years.
Yeah, I think, honestly, he had such a huge intellect, and I think that he found the process of the sort of rock and roll industry fascinating, but he became bored very, very quickly, and if something didn't interest him, he'd move on. And in that respect, he was a bit of a sort of, as well as a social butterfly, a bit of an intellectual butterfly as well, actually.
I always thought that's why he gravitated to Ricky Gervais, because they were on obviously comedy and music and stuff. But Ricky Gervais has that sort of intellect. Whenever I listen to him and see him and do, his mind is going so fast that you are want to try to just keep up with him, much less try to, you know, be on a same level. And it always felt like when Bowie and Ricky Gervais were doing anything together, they were just two friends having the best time.
I think you're completely right, and I think that what Bowie was, Bowie didn't suffer fools gladly, and if he didn't think you were up to it, you'd be dropped immediately. So actually, the people that he kept relationships with, the people he fostered relationships with, tended to be people who had maybe a bit of an off-the-wall idea of themselves, but also one of the things that people don't really know about Bowie is he had a pretty filthy sense of humor. I mean, he was one of the boys, although this didn't sort of manifest itself in his work, in his art very much, he loved a dirty joke.
That's so funny to me.
With Bowie, man, there's so much. Dylan Jones is a great book, David Bowie, The Oral History. Was Bowie to you, like, is there a period that you enjoyed the most?
I think that what he tended to do during his life, he sort of co-opted people. And I think that throughout my book, there are so many people I spoke to who felt that they had sort of a 2 or 3 year period with him. And then suddenly the phone call stopped and he wouldn't be around. And you kind of realized that that was the end. And that happened to me, happened to lots of people. But the weird thing is, almost nobody I interviewed for the book bears any grudge, because I think the trade-off of knowing David Bowie for that period of time, whether it was in a sort of social sense or in a musician sense or maybe you were a lover, the trade-off was always worth it.
Do you think you looked at a guy like Brian Ferry, who had kind of that one thing with Roxy Music and that kind of vibe? I wouldn't say disdain, but he looked at him and said, like, that's boring just to do the same thing over and over?
Oh, I would use the word disdain.
Okay. All right, fair.
I think he did. I think that he thought that he often thought that rock and roll was a bit ridiculous. In fact, people always cite Bowie as being this great fashion plate, as someone who understood fashion, who was a bit of a narcissist, who dressed up all the time. And actually, nothing could be further from the truth. He understood the power of fashion in the same way that he understood the power of lighting or choreography or dance or photography. These were all elements which he use in order to project himself, but he wasn't a dandy at all. In fact, I remember him saying to me once that when he used to live in New York towards the end of his life, he spent a decade living in New York, he said, the easiest way to walk around New York and not be recognized is to wear a hat and carry a Greek newspaper. He says, no one will ever bother you.
Dylan, before we let you go, I just want to talk about his connection to Detroit, because there's quite a few stories about Detroit in here and Bowie's relationship.
He loved Detroit. I think Detroit was the place where he misbehaved more than anywhere else in North America.
We'd always heard that Gene Genie was inspired by a streetwalker that he saw, like maybe when he was staying at the Pontchartrain.
Yep, completely true.
There it is.
Wow.
All right, well, we know the song we're playing tomorrow. Dylan, you're awesome. Congratulations on a great piece of work. I wish we had more time. Let's talk more.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.